Hello, friends. This is the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I want to thank everyone so much for listening today. I wanted to tell everyone that Michiko Hayashi's mother passed away recently, and it was a tragic passing, a beautiful, sweet and I would like to ask everyone around the world, please send lots of love and light to both Michiko and her beautiful mom and family for her passing. Michiko, of course, is the head of the Emoto Peace Project, which is a nonprofit children's charity, which teaches children around the world love and gratitude so that they can make a better place. It's nonprofit, and your donations are always appreciated. If you'd like more information about her work, please go to her website at www.emotopeaceproject.com. .net. That's E-M-O-T-O, peaceproject.net. I wanted to tell everyone, I want to thank him so much for listening today. We had a wonderful talk with Simon Parks during the last hour. Tomorrow on September 29th on September 29th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., I'll be having a wonderful Out of This World Galactic Wisdom Psychic Fair in Olympia at 9101 Stillicum Road. In Olympia, and it's free. It's a free event, and you're all welcome to come. And one of the people there, one of the vendors there at the fair, will be Todd Rolson. Todd is a wonderful energy healer and a psychic. And Todd, are you there?
Hey, Ted.
Oh, okay, good. It's so good to talk to you, Todd. Todd, could you tell everyone what you do in 25 words or less?
Sure. I am a full-time psychic. For over 20 years, and I'm a bit rare because I see everything in energy. And basically, to sum it up, the result of that is I created some work, which I'm sure we're going to mention today, because, heck, it's, you know, when you mention the Emotos, I get super excited because I don't know if I ever told you, but the Emotos basically gave me the form and idea to create my work.
Really? Wow.
Yes. Yeah. And the Emotos proved that your thoughts create energy, and I know you've been a big supporter of it, Ted, and I've always been impressed by that, and I know you have a lot of, you're doing a lot of work with them and support them in all forms, but their work proved that patterns create energy, and so the other aspect of my work is creating energy discs, and those energy discs come from a higher level of consciousness. And so these patterns come down, and they come into physical in an acrylic disc, and they produce that energy.
Wow, amazing. I don't know of anyone who does the same kind of work you do, Todd.
You know, since I see everything in energy, I haven't run into anything like it yet. There are some similar focuses that can be translated in. I know this guy who makes honey. Who makes an incredible honey with minerals that's very high level and blocks some EMF. But I haven't run into anything that matches the energy of my work, and that's okay. I mean, we are all expanding. I came into this planet to bring these patterns in, which are a bit higher, and they're basically designed to support the growth of the higher self, which is, you know, everybody's working on. So, you know, higher energy creates better energy, and that's kind of been my philosophy with my work.
Wow. Wow. Beautiful, beautiful, Todd. Now, tomorrow you'll be at the Emerald Spiral, which is a big psychic fair in Kent, Washington. That'll be September 22nd. And then you'll also be at my Galactic Wisdom Psychic Fair on a week from tomorrow, on September 29th in Olympia, too.
Yeah, and I'm super excited. I'm at these fairs every week because it's just so much fun to just put the disc in people's hands and let them experience it, and then also see the growth. You know, being a psychic as I am, I tend to know what will help people a bit, and I always offer suggestions. And it's fortunate. You know how it is, Ted. You get to do what you love. You get to do your own work. And you're a bit of a visionary yourself, so just getting out there and creating your life is really coming from higher self, and that's kind of what I like to teach. It's what I like to talk about, how I exist.
Well, fantastic, Todd. What's your website so people can find out more information about you?
Yeah, it's just toddrolson.com, and I'll spell it for you. I have an unusual last name. It's Swedish. So it's just T-O-D-D and R-O-H-L-S-S-O-N. So that's where you can see the design and get in touch with me for if you're led to for any other reason.
Okay, great, Todd. Well, Todd, thanks so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it. You're a great guy, and you do wonderful work.
Yeah, and thanks for inviting me on, and I look forward to seeing you at your show, and I'm excited about actually coming down to Olympia for that. So I do everything intuitively, and they said, yes, go to that show, and I think it's because you're part of it, and you're getting great information out there. So bye to everyone, and have a beautiful day.
Okay, thank you so much, Todd, for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Todd. All right. Todd lives in the Seattle, just north of Seattle. He's a wonderful fellow, and please check out his website. You'll be able to meet him in person, if you'd like, at my Galactic Wisdom Healing Fair, Psychic and Healing Fair, 1 week from tomorrow, September 29th, at 9101 Stillicum Road in Olympia. For more information, just give me a call at 509-750-9793 or send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. And with that, I'd like to play a segment now. This is from Tammy Chapman, an interview I did with her recently at Mount Shasta. She is from Minnesota. She came on my trip to Mount Shasta last year, and the Sasquatch and the people of Telos and the Hollow Earth healed her leg so she could walk again. For the first time in 30 years, she's able to walk again. And please listen to this interview of a miracle healing. It's about 9 minutes long. Eric, if you could please play that, and then I'll come back on the air.
Hello, friends. I'm at beautiful Mount Shasta, one of the world's most spiritual places now in Northern California, and I'm with a lovely lady named Tammy. She was on my trip to Mount Shasta a year ago, and for the past year, I've been trying to get a hold of Tammy to interview her, and we finally can meet. She came all the way from Minnesota after many delays, and Tammy, thank you so much for talking to me today.
You're welcome, Ted. Glad to be here.
You were on my ship trip to Mount Shasta a year ago in 2017. You were sleeping in a van, in your van at night. We were all camped in this campsite. What happened in the middle of the night?
Well, I had had an experience with Sasquatch earlier that had made some sounds when very close to me out by the cars. And then that night, as I was sleeping, I heard what I think were Sasquatches, more than one outside my car. I don't think it could have been anything else making the noises that it made, but I did not open my eyes because I was not ready to see that. But I do believe that they gave me some kind of a healing that night, because the next day I was, my knees had been very bad, and the next day they were a lot better. And then later that night I had a very profound experience. I know I was awake because I had just gotten in and out of the car. And I just settled back in into the reclined position, staring up at the ceiling of the car. And all of a sudden, the ceiling wasn't there anymore. I was looking right up at the stars. I was looking straight up at the stars, and it was the most miraculous thing. I was just astounded, and I knew I was awake, and I didn't want to touch anything because I didn't know if I was seeing through the roof of the car or if it had actually disappeared. So I turned my head slowly to the left. I wanted to see where the car ended and space began. And it wasn't a clear demarcated line like I thought it was going to be. It was a gradual fade from solid to not solid. And so I didn't want to do anything to disrupt the experience. So I slowly turned my head, and just as I was relaxing into it, just looking up at the stars and the beauty and just enjoying the experience, all of a sudden, right above me, there appeared a ship. It appeared in three segments. They were like elongated octagonal segments, flat on the top with three ends on each side. And it appeared in three segments. The one closest appeared first, like boom, boom, boom. And it was an entire, I think it was an octagon-shaped ship as well. It was lower than the tops of the trees. That's how close this thing was. It was just below the tops of the trees in level. And it was a medium gray. It had a pattern of dots and dashes and chevrons on the bottom. And I was just so astounded. I was like, I couldn't believe this was happening to me. And I felt like It was kind of similar to the experience you hear people talk about in near-death experiences, where you feel that all-encompassing unconditional love, acceptance, support. I was in a euphoric state. I mean, there was no fear involved at all. I felt like I knew them. I felt like they were there to support me. I felt like I'd been feeling very alone in my life recently, and the trip to Mount Shasta was a big thing for me to move forward in my life, and I think this experience was part of it. That the feeling I got from them was that we're always here. We're always here to support you and always here for you. It was a very wonderful thing. And they communicated a lot to me, some of which I can't remember, but I remember the way I felt. And I felt very much supported and like I was here for a reason and that I shouldn't give up. That when I had challenges to face, that I should keep going because I'm here for a reason. And then they showed me some sort of a vision, and I can't remember all of the vision. Part of it was a little frightening, and when I got scared, I know that they stopped, and I don't remember all of it. I think because I'm not meant to remember all of it yet. I think that at the right time I'll remember all of the vision. Right after that, after I got scared, they stopped the vision. I was just all of a sudden looking up at the stars again. And the ship, I couldn't see the ship anymore, but I was looking up at the stars again, and I thought, wow, that was amazing. And I couldn't believe this was happening to me, little old Tammy from Minnesota, rural Minnesota. And so I was just enjoying relaxing the stars again, and it appeared again. The ship appeared again, right above me the same way, closest section first, boom, boom, boom. And I felt from them, what I felt from them is, we're always here, whether you see us or not. They were letting me know they were there, whether I could physically see them or not. And they wanted me also to know that the experience was real. And that's why they reappeared to me again. And I felt like a real sense of peace, joy, and love. I mean, that's what I felt. It's very similar to what people describe feeling when they have near-death experiences. And after that, I just kind of, they were sitting there for a while, and I kind of relaxed, and then all of a sudden it was over. I was looking back up at the roof of the car again.
And tell me, what happened to your legs after that? Were you able to walk?
Yes. I mean, when I got to Mount Shasta that year, I was still in a wheelchair. When I was on my way, they were wheeling me between plane to plane, all the way there. They wheeled me to my rental car. And the next day, I was able to use a cane. And the day after that, I didn't even need a cane.
That's an incredible story. That's an incredible story. Well, you know, that last night, I've had I injured my right eye by looking at the sun too long 42 years ago, and my vision decreased from 2015 to 2030 in my right eye. My left eye is 20/15, and last night they healed my eye, and now I have 20/15 in both eyes. And I know it when I woke up this morning. I looked out, and everything was crystal clear.
Wow, that's amazing. Really amazing. I think everybody should make a trip to Mount Shasta once in their life, at least once in their life.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Tammy, that's an incredible story, and I want to thank you so much for sharing that. You know, I know you arrived late. It seemed like there was something against you coming again, because you had all kinds of problems getting out here this time.
I had problems both times. The first time, it seemed like I've had kidney issues the last couple of years, but it seems like I got really sick right when I was getting ready to plan to go. The day that I wanted to leave, I got very ill, and the same thing happened this year. And I was determined to come. When I finally did get on a plane, I kept having delays. I had a delay where the plane got in late to LAX, and I had to stay overnight in Los Angeles. Then they put me on the wrong flight the next morning. They put me on a different flight and forgot my luggage. Then when I finally got to the airport an hour away where I was going to get a rental car, they had lost my luggage, and then I couldn't get a rental car because I didn't have the right kind of credit card. It was just one thing after another trying to stop me from coming here. And finally, I just went to, and even the Greyhound bus that's going south were canceled. I said, you know what? just get put me on the city bus. I'm going down to the Greyhound station. I just have a feeling that's where I need to go. Two things could have happened. There was a Greyhound going to a train platform, and I could have taken the train, and that would have got me here really late. But miraculously, when I got to the bus station, everybody was so kind. At the airport, they hadn't been that way. Like, nobody really paid attention to what was going on. But when I got down to the bus station, it was very heartwarming, because not just the employees, but everybody in there wanted to help me. And right after that, the buses decided to go south again, an hour later than they normally do. They decided to go south just after I arrived.
Well, that's a miracle story, and I'm so glad you're here. And even though you got here late, I got a message from the Sasquatch and the Talosians and Adama that they're going to give you another healing while you're here.
Awesome.
So anyway, Tammy, well, thank you so much for sharing your beautiful story.
Thank you, Ted. It was a pleasure.
Hello, friends. That was Tammy Chapman from Minnesota. I myself, my eyesight was healed in my right eye from 2030, 2040 down to 2010, 2015. I have crystal clear vision in both my eyes. What I'd like to do is a little bit of background. In February of 2018, friends and I visited a famous extraterrestrial human skulls museum at a place called Paracas, Peru, which is right on the Pacific. The museum itself contains over 100 extraterrestrial human skulls and various other artifacts. The skulls are evidence of a hybrid extraterrestrial human species, which were wiped out 1,000 years ago. Today, during this segment, I'll bring in the spirits of these hybrid beings and give messages on why they were here and what they were trying to accomplish. And with that, Eric, go ahead and play it now, and then we'll have a few minutes left at the end of this hour, and I'll wrap up today's program. But if you could play that here, I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, friends. I'm at the Juan Navarro Elongated Skull Museum here in Paracas, Peru today. And it's a fascinating place because it has elongated skulls. Now, these skulls, I've meditated, are not completely human. They represent a hybridized race that was done by the reptilians to create a human reptilian entity to eventually populate the planet with a species that would be friendly to the reptilians. I'm standing in front of a glass case here, and the biggest thing that you notice is that the skull itself extends back maybe 20-25% more, sometimes 30% more than our normal human skulls. They're also kind of like a bubble. Some of them are rounded, some of them are they extend back in an elongated position. And at the very top of the skull, many of the skulls have no sutures. And that's significant because when regular humans are born on this planet Earth, they have sutures on the skull itself that allows them, the head, to pass through the mother's womb. However, if you're hatched in an egg like a reptilian or a snake, then you're not going to need the sutures, and many of these skulls don't have any sutures. They're very smooth. That's an important difference to note. These entities existed between, I'm going to meditate now and contact them. I'm covering myself first with lots of white light. I have to do this for protection when I'm contacting negative entities. I got myself covered with lots of white light, and then I'm putting a series of mirrors to deflect any negativity. I'm going to do the hue three times to bring in the Galactic Alliance. They said I'm going to need the protection if I'm contacting them, so I'm going to say this three times. Hue. Please say this after me too, my dear audience. It'll help protect you too. Hue. Two more times. Hue. And one more time. Hue. Okay, well, now the Galactics are here. They're protecting me, so I can contact them without any fear. They say they came here in 500 BC to Peru. They landed in what's called the Nazca Lines. And all of the drawings and different figures in the Nazca Lines are actually their signpost for landing ET craft. The time frame, 2,000-3,000 years ago, And what they did is that they not only created these hybrid human reptilian entities, but they also did it south of Nazca as well. There's another place called the Chowchilla Indian Indian Archaeological Site, where they have dozens and dozens of humans, of human mummies, which have actually, they have like huge, like round shaped heads, with the same thing without any sutures. They said they came here as an experiment between this race came here, this hybridized race came here between 500 BC to 500 AD. And they were an experiment to try to take over this planet. They tested to see what hybridized humans would be like here. What's interesting, I'm told, is that the Nazca Indians came into this area during this time, and they killed them all off because they represented them as a threat. What's interesting is that if you look at them, this is the area between Pecaris and the Nazca lines is one of the driest areas in the world, and the lack of any moisture has meant that there's been almost no deterioration in many of the many of the skulls are almost perfect condition. And what's amazing as well, there are skulls here as well, which actually still has the hair left on the skull, and that's because of the very, 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 very dry conditions. They said that they were helped with their extraterrestrial brothers and sisters. There's been a lot of extraterrestrial activity here in Peru in the past. And the message that I got when I was meditating yesterday is that this is yet just another attempt in a long line of attempts by the reptilians to try to colonize planet Earth and take it over. Each time the reptilians and their negative allies have come in and tried to take over planet Earth, it's failed. I'm also standing in front of a skull here that appears to be from the Orion, one of the, we call them Greys of the Orions. This is from the Orion constellation. You can tell this is a skull, and I'll post this on my website. It has large round sockets for the left eye and the right eye. The Orions themselves were taken over by the reptilians or the Dracos many millennia ago. And when they were just starting, what I'm told by my galactic friends, they were just starting space travel when they did. And they took over most of the Orions, the Greys. They took the men, they put them into slavery. The women, they killed all the women and children except for about 1,600 Grey entities, which they genetically hybridized to create a slave race. These Greys are the ones that that contacted President Eisenhower in 1954, March of 1954, for an agreement of collaboration with the U.S. government that's been in effect ever since. It's called the Treaty of Merida, which most Americans haven't heard about, but it's still in effect. It's completely illegal, but it's been there for over 60, 70 years. The Greys themselves, they're a very fragile species. They suffer from what's called progenesis, in which case their DNA is breaking down over time. But it's very rare to find a skull from the gray aliens here, and I can see one right in front of me here now. They don't really have human teeth. They have kind of like fangs. I have a couple of my friends in my group with me. Mary, what do you think of this skull of the?
Yeah, it looks very different than a human skull, with these little fang type things coming out the way the doesn't have a nose socket the way you would imagine.
Right. Yeah, it does look like that. Michiko, what do you think of this? These skulls?
They look like they're from out of world, not from this Mother Earth, from not this planet, from other planet, because obviously the skull is not the same as our skull, so.
That's very interesting. I believe this is one of the few places in the world where you can see these half human, half extraterrestrial skulls.
Actually, it's really amazing that there are so many skulls here.
They have over 100, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I have another friend of mine named Dave here on the trip, and Dave's always interesting. Dave, what do you think of these skulls here?
I find them incredibly interesting. You know, you're looking at the growth plates that are normal for humans, and some of them can coincide with that, and some do not.
Right.
So there's just differences here that are just basic structural differences. Also, I'm noticing that even the thickness of the skulls vary, right? And so that's all very interesting. You know, I don't know what to make of it yet.
Right.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that I do have I have four Inca ancient Inca spirits with me today, and one of them is an Inca brother because I had a previous life at Machu Picchu, and he says that before the Incas built Machu Picchu back in the 13th, 14th, 15th centuries, that there was a reptilian race that was there, and they looked at these skulls that we're seeing in front of us here is part of that effort by the reptilians to take over this part of the world, and they did it through hybridization. It was easier for them to create a joint human-reptilian entity and have that species based here so they could eventually take over the planet. It failed, though, as all of their attempts have failed. They're eventually driven out. And what's interesting is that my Inca brother is telling me now that the agreement that President Eisenhower signed with the reptilians in March of 1954 allowed the reptilians and the greys to come into this planet. And since that time, for the last 60, 70 years, they have also attempted to create a hybridized gray human and reptilian human race in order to take over planet Earth. The greys themselves find our atmosphere too oxygen rich for them. And so one of the reasons for the U.S. government, for the government chemtrail program, is to alter the atmosphere of the planet Earth to make it less friendly to humans to reduce population and make it more friendly to the reptilians and the greys so that they can live here and we can't. On the home planet of Draco, where the reptilians come from, my galactic friends say that their atmosphere is mostly barium, strontium, titanium, and sulfur. And what the U.S. government's been spraying now for decades is barium, strontium, aluminum, and sulfur. These are the key ingredients of the Draco atmosphere. This is not for our benefit. It's for the benefit of another species. But good times are coming. I don't want to alarm anyone with that saying that, because the galactics have stepped in, and they are slowly eliminating chemtrails and the influence of the reptilians on this planet. And we are slowly getting our free will back. This, of course, will be left for another program. But what we're seeing here in this museum in Picaris, Peru, on the coast of Peru, is evidence of a hybridized human-reptilian, human-gray alien race. That was an attempt by the reptilians from 500 BC to 500 AD to start a human population that eventually, in their hope, would take over the planet. They've done this, actually the reptilians have done this in 22 other star systems where they've come in, hybridized the race, and then eventually taken over the planet. It's not going to be allowed here, though, on planet Earth, because we humans, human beings on this planet, have a destiny to ascend into the higher dimensions. And Gaia herself is helping us whenever she can, but in order for us to help with that evolution, we humans on this planet have to make the right choices. And that means not fighting with each other. That means not blowing up the planet with nuclear weapons. That means not starting a nuclear war with North Korea. That means treating each other with love, kindness, and respect. And always trying to think the positive and best out of people, because that's our true nature, is to be kind, benevolent, and loving. There's a key distinction, my galactic friends tell me, between service to self and service to others. The reptilians and their ally, gray allies, are service to self. They're negative, they feed off war and hatred and violence. And we're fighting, and when we're fighting all the time, what happens is that the reptilians actually feed off that negativity. So if you want to get rid of their influence and go off to ascend into the higher dimensions, get rid of your negativity. Get rid of your service to self. So be of service to others, because it always comes back to you. As my friend Professor Albert Einstein has told me many times, love is the most important force in the universe, and so that's what this planet needs more of that. I'm stepping over to another place here in the museum, and you can see where many of the skulls, like this one in front of me here, they have absolutely no sutures on the top of the skull. That means that it was hatched. It was like an egg. The reptilian snakes, for example, they hatch a lot of their creatures that way, through egg laying. Chickens lay eggs because they're actually, if you look back in the evolutionary history, they're related to snakes and the reptilians. So they have that part. What I mentioned before about the hair, it's very dry here. I'm stepping in front of a skull now, and you can see, I have my friend Mary here with me. Mary, you can see the hair around it. What do you think of that?
That's kind of reddish brown and fine and straight, not like the hair of the dark, lustrous black hair of the Peruvians that we see today. It's very different.
It looks red, doesn't it?
Yes.
It almost looks like kind of ape, the hair of the ape, though,
uh-huh.
to me.
Right.
It's not really like human hair, but it's similar to, more like an ape, the hair of the ape.
Now, this is something very interesting I want to share with all my listeners around the world. The people who were out, the entities who were out at Easter Island, the tall ones there who built those Eastern Island statues, also had red hair. And the Anunnaki, who were reptilians here many thousands of years ago, who employed humans as a slave race to mine gold on the planet, they were reptilian as well. And the interesting thing is, there's the connection. I just got it. They told me that that these hybridizations were actually hybrid Anunnaki humans left over who came here to try to take over the planet. Failed, but here's the evidence here now. You know, this kind of information is carefully hid in the mass media. You don't hear about it. Even last October, I was in Peru as well, and so I went looking for the museum. As soon as I got off the bus, I started asking people, where's the Skull Museum? Nobody knew. I only found it on the internet after a couple hours of research. And even when you come into the building is not marked. It's kind of...
We asked several people, store owners along the way, to get over here, and none of them knew where it was. And in fact, they pointed us in the opposite direction of
sure.
the museum.
If you look at all the guidebooks for Peru, none of them list it. None of them.
That's a little strange, isn't it?
Well, it's a yet part of the kind of treatment that any kind of scientific evidence, and I consider this scientific evidence, credible evidence, that that there has been extraterrestrial influence on this planet is excluded from the travel writers. They just don't talk about it, period. But here it is, and I'm glad. I want to thank Carolyn White of Olympia. She's a wonderful reader and an aura reader and a psychic who told me about the museum here at Picaris, what she had found many years ago.
So the Anunnaki have red hair like that too?
The Anunnaki have red hair, right, absolutely. So what I'm thinking, they said these are half Anunnaki, half human hybrids here. And that's why you see the skulls here. Like, look at this one here. This skull here, I'm just pointing this out in this diagram. In this thing, look at that skull. There's no sutures in the back. No sutures at all. Nothing. This means that these entities were hatched. They weren't normal humans. Larry, my friend Larry from Canada. Larry, what do you think of this?
This is fascinating. Ancient history and evidence of interstellar travel by beings that came to this planet and harvested it a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Fascinating stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? Now, your wife...
Look at that quilt there.
Oh, yes.
I make those today.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's and wonderful. Eliana, I wanted to ask you quickly.
Yes.
What do you think of these skulls?
Amazing. Mm-hmm. That were... The history of our planet is suppressed.
It's suppressed, yeah, absolutely.
Yes, yeah. It's amazing. I'm just, everybody should see this. This is our history. We should know, learn and know about it.
Right.
That's all I have to say.
Well, you have strong intuitive and psychic powers, and I just wanted to ask you, are you picking anything up from these skulls today?
No, right now. No. But my own opinion is amazing. I really can't. I have no words that we suppress for this knowledge for so long.
Sure. Right.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. The skulls are, to say once again, the eye sockets seem to be larger than normal human eye sockets on the skulls. There is an elongated feature of the skulls that goes way back. And some of the skulls have sutures, but most of them do not. In other words, they're just smooth on the back, and that's very telling because they were hatched. That's what I was told now.
Don't we have three lobes, four lobes, and this one have only three? A human has only three lobes, the sections.
Right.
And these lobes have only three.
Right, yeah, so there's one less lobe on these skulls.
Yeah, all of them, they carry three or two or none.
Three or two or none.
That one, I don't think, has any.
I don't think, we're looking at another skull now that, oh my goodness, how many lobes? It looks like one large lobe on the top.
Yeah.
Is there a suture? There's one?
I don't know.
I don't see a suture there. We're comparing this skull with human skulls,
yeah.
Because normal human skulls have like four lobes,
and
this one doesn't. It just has one.
Mm-hmm.
This is very different. Also, the eye sockets are much bigger than
normal human. I thought, yeah. So what about this gray? Like, there's no mouth. What's that?
What's this?
Okay, that's a gray. That's that. We're looking at another skull now. This is a gray alien.
What is this? Where there's no mouth?
There's no mouth because they don't. I think they communicate telepathically, and they absorb nutrients through their skin. As a slave species, the grays are used by the reptilians to do their dirty work. They're robotic. They have no emotions. They're mechanical. They're very mechanical. Yeah, they're very mechanical. They're biological, but they're not. They have no emotions. They're total service to self.
Their bodies, all technology, is not.
They have no emotions. Yeah, they're the epitome of artificial intelligence in one sense.
Looks almost like a crab or something because there's some stone. The bones are sticking out.
Right. Right. It looks like something that would, that's correct. It looks like a crustacean from the front of it. They don't have normal teeth.
No, and not mouth. It's just only weird looking eyes.
Yeah.
It's almost like crab or something.
The eyes are kind of look like they're sunken, sort of.
It's not a human.
Clearly not a human skull. It's very, very different than what a round shape skull here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's probably, I've been told, there's over 100 skulls here. Not all of them are on display. This is kind of like a sampling of them, but on display you maybe have 50 or 60 skulls here. Also, my friends Dave and Mary and Michiko also have some. Go ahead, Dave.
Oh, we were just talking about the growth plates again and the differences in the skulls here. And you can look at this skull here, and it's got these growth plates that you can see that follows like what you would normally term as human growth plates. But then you come over to this skull over here, and this looks closer to that movie Alien, where it doesn't have any of that growth plates that you normally see in the rear, and it's elongated. It comes completely back. It's a completely different structure than the other skulls here. It's just very obviously different. And that's just so very interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, what is the explanation?
I think what it is that these are hybridized individuals, entities.
You're
and some of them have more reptilian or Anunnaki genes than others. Mm-hmm. Some of them have more human genes versus Anunnaki or reptilian or gray genes than others. So you have that difference between each one.
Yeah. And then here's one right here that doesn't show hardly any growth plates whatsoever. I don't know if that's because it's covered maybe with a little scalp still left over or... but you can't see much growth plates at all.
Well, for the skulls that have don't have any growth plates or very little growth, very few growth plates, I would argue that those have the most percentage of reptilian genes in them or Anunnaki genes. So they have actually less human.
The skull itself is a completely different shape than the other two that we were just talking about. So it does something even different. Instead of coming back elongated, it goes more on the up, comes up a little bit, and then elongates back.
Right.
That's very interesting.
Right. Very, very interesting.
This voice. What is this? So perfectly shaped.
Liliana is pointing to a skull that, for my listeners,
it has
a hole in it, but it's kind of like, it looks like a leaf that's been cut out of the skull.
Yeah.
There is a diagram, another explanation over here, where the Indians of that time, in order to cure people, it's kind of like bloodletting in medieval England.
See.
They would cut a hole in a person's head and drain out the blood or the bad blood or the bad spirit out of the person.
Oh my God.
So that's what they would do, and that's why you're looking at these skulls.
Yep.
Personally, I think there would be a better way to get well other than putting a hole in your head and draining out the bad blood or your bad brain. But that's what they would do back then, believing that they thought that it was a good thing, much like medieval England.
Yeah. One little hole there.
Correct.
Well, that looks like a dent, too. So that person fell or he got hit with one of these Inca tomahawks that you can see over here in this other case. You can see those look like tomahawks, but they're blunt instruments, and that looks like maybe something from battle, or maybe they took a fall. This also looks similar to that, whereas this is more...
Surgical.
Out.
Those are etched
Those
out,
are
surgical.
Right.
You have to remember that during a 1,000-year period from 500 B.C. to 500 A.D., the Nazca Indians came in and they did a program of genocide. They wanted to kill off all of these hybrids.
So
they viewed them as a threat.
Uh-huh.
They must be from different planets, too, not from the same planet, but different planets.
They could be from different planets. That's true.
Because the shapes are very different.
All the shapes are very different, yeah. All the shapes, there's not one standardized skull among these. They're all very different.
What happened to this guy? Look.
Yeah, it's hard to say with that.
Yeah, you're looking at three different, it could be as where they, it looks like there's three indentations in the skull where they, three or four or five, where they repeatedly hit this individual on its head in order to kill it. It could have been stoned to death, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. There's a lot of things here. Yeah, there's a lot of things here left unanswered. But it's clearly a fascinating museum. I've never seen such a... it's almost like science fiction.
Yeah. It doesn't even... I had to look closely and make sure that they were actually real.
Yeah, right.
And they do appear to be real, and you can even almost smell the death here, which is something that you can't get from pictures, is you can almost smell it.
My galactic friends say that we humans today on the surface of the planet are the result of thousands of 22 different, at least 22 different programs in the past by different alien races to try to hybridize us and make us subservient to the incoming gods, whoever the new gods were. And this attempt was yet another attempt, they tell me, of hybridization, of creating a human reptilian slave-like population, but failed, as all the efforts on this planet have failed to create this subservient population.
Ted, could you kind of tune into what the candelabra, who built the candelabra,
what is the candelabra,
that's
please?
A big, it's Stella out on the mountainside, outside of town. It looks like a trident.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Interesting you mentioned the word trident.
Yeah, so do you have any sense of who built that or what it was?
Yeah, this fits into the Nazca lines. That was a marker for the ships to come into this area. It was actually a beacon for them to come in along with the Nazca lines. This is all part of the Nazca lines. It's not separate. Everything's interrelated with each other event. And that's why you see this candelabra. It's like it looks like a trident.
Right.
Looks like a trident or like a pitchfork upside down. Where you've got three pillars for the pitchfork.
Is it possible that that candelabra could have been some sort of tuning fork instead of like the normal two? It's got three.
Could be.
let the two on the outside make the middle one resonate and send power out?
Well, as Dr. Masuramoto has stated before, is that everything's vibration, or hado, right, in Japanese. And I know that the Nazis during World War II changed the frequency standard for music from 432 hertz to 440 hertz. 440 hertz is an unstable musical tone that makes people agitated, and Hitler thought makes them more militaristic. After President Truman invited 8,000 to 10,000 Nazis to the United States to establish various government, the CIA and NASA, the U.S. government changed the standard for music in the United States in 1950 from 432 to 440 to make us more agitated as well. So getting back to your question, you saw there's a huge... What did you call it again?
Candelabra.
Candelabra, or a trident outside of Paracas on this hillside. And that could be an attempt to change the frequency of this area from harmonic frequencies, from a more loving and balanced frequency, to one that would be more fitting to a militaristic reptilian takeover of planet Earth. I don't know. There's a lot of unanswered questions here. Mitchie, what do you think of this Skull Museum?
This is really amazing. I have seen these on TV before, but I have never seen any one of these, I mean, for real. And just seeing all these, so many skulls like this, and, but each of them are really not exactly the same, different with holes or with hair or shapes different. And maybe one of them is really small. Usually they are all large skull. So we can tell that those beings were really big, I think.
Yeah.
But there is a small one there, and I was just wondering if this was one of the children, maybe? I don't know, but this is really small. There's one that is really small.
This one here appears to have, red hair on it. Do you notice the red hair?
Most of them, the ones that have hairs are red kind of hair.
Mm-hmm. And there's another one right next to it. Mm-hmm. You can see the red hair. It's quite pronounced. I'll take a picture and post it on the website.
Uh-huh.
But the skulls, for being, 2,000 years old, are quite well preserved.
Exactly. Even with teeth and mm-hmm. hair and even skin, you can see that skin.
Oh, too. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, what does the skin look like? Does it look scaly like reptilian? Does it look human-like?
It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Are the eye sockets different and bigger than normal?
Yes, the eye sockets are different and bigger than normal.
I think.
These entities had much bigger eyes than normal humans do. They had huge jawbones, too.
Mm-hmm.
And this may be related as well to the Nephilim, which are giants who lived here on the planet.
So we see corns and beans here, but do you think they were eating corns from that time, maybe?
Could have been. But most of the reptilians that I've been told about are flesh eaters. They eat meat.
Mm.
So that's where in the history of humanity, most humans the benevolent humans outside of planet Earth are vegetarian. They don't eat meat. The whole passion for eating meat on this planet right now by humanity is a leftover from genetic manipulation by the human race, by the reptilians, because we weren't programmed originally to eat meat at all. That had to be done to us by an outside source.
But I was just curious why Inca people were sacrificing those children. I mean, you know, at the time of disasters, earthquakes and like that, if they are really not meat-eating people, they were sacrificing children for God.
For the gods, yeah.
If they are really, good, benevolent beings,
right.
I mean, I don't know why they had to do that.
Well, I think they were influenced by these negative entities.
You think
somehow. You know, not all of them, but some of them were. I know that in Mexico City, the Pyramid of the Moon and the Pyramid of the Sun, the Aztecs there, there was a whole human sacrifice cult. And the road between the Pyramid of the Moon and the Pyramid of the Sun outside Mexico City The street name is called the Avenue of the Dead.
Oh my gosh.
and the place, if you go to Mexico City and you see those pyramids, you get a guide. He'll tell you the places where the blood used to run down the pyramids. Now, what benevolent human civilization would kill humans and allow the blood to run down these pyramids to sacrifice for gods? Well, it would make sense, however, if those gods were reptilians or Anunnaki and they fed off humans. You see, the reptilians look at humans as a food source, much like we look at chicken or beef. Yeah. So in their worldview, it says, hey, we just got a bunch of humans down there. Let's come sit down and have a little snack. You see what I mean? So these are you have to look at it that way. So, I'm so glad I could share this with you today, my dear listeners around the world. The museum here at Paracas is about 3.5 hours outside of Lima, Peru. It's a fascinating place. You can look up information on it on the web if you really dig. You're not going to find any information or write-ups about this museum in any guidebook that I've seen about Peru. But it's fascinating here. It's about 3.5 hours by bus outside of Lima, and I strongly urge you to come here if you have a chance.
My friends, I hope you enjoyed this segment about the Skull Museum in Peru. It's a fascinating place. I plan to be going back sometime next year. I'm not sure when, but if you'd like to go, please send me an email. I wanted to tell everyone today that we have many wonderful things in store for us. As my friends Albert Einstein and President Kennedy tell me, we have a really bright, beautiful future, not only for ourselves, but our children and children's children. Professor Einstein wrote his letter called The Bomb of Love to his daughter in 1955, and I just want to quote a couple of sentences before we finish today's program. He said, the universal force of the universe is love. He wrote that love is light that enlightens those who give and receive it. Love is gravity because it makes some people feel attracted to others. Love is power because it multiplies the best we have and allows humanity not to be extinguished in their blind selfishness. Love unfolds and reveals. For love, we live and die. God is love, and love is God, and God is love. And one thing also that Dr. Masaru Emoto wrote before he passed away, that he said that water is God and God is water. So please today, please send lots of love and light to Simon Park so he will feel better. And please send lots of love and light as well to Michiko Hayashi and her beautiful family for her beautiful mother's passing. I know your love, light, and good thoughts will really be appreciated by the families. And with that, I'd like to wrap up today's show with All You Need Is Love by the Beatles. I hope everyone listening today has a really happy and wonderful weekend. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening and for helping to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. We are listener-supported, so we appreciate Out of This World is supported by donations. And if you'd like to donate, please go to our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. And I know together we can make this world a much better and happier place. And if we could play Erica, All You Need Is Love by the Beatles, and I hope everyone has a wonderful and happy weekend. Thank you again so much for listening today.